This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate. Hail cheaters and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Brandon and I'm here with my co-host Josh. Josh, how are you today as we record?
I am doing fine. Thank you, Brandon. How are you?
Well, you know, life goes on. I'll tell you that much. But coming out of game week 12, I'm part of that large pack of managers who, feeling a little blue. I ended up with 39 points, 1 point below the average. Yeah, I'm just on a tough run here.
I have to be honest with you, Brandon. Given what I took one look at your midfield at 7:30 a.m. on Saturday morning, and I thought there was 39 seemed out of reach. To be totally honest, you felt a very risky midfield this weekend. Yeah, out of necessity, I'll grant you.
I went 4-3-3 because Adam Lallana looked like he was going to be injured, and I just stacked it up in my defense, and Kyle Walker, who has been my savior all season, ended up with 0 points, and to make matters worse, went off with an injury. It doesn't look like anything's going to come of that, but yeah, my over-reliance on Arsenal becomes a running theme on the Always Cheating podcast with Walcott and Ozil. It's just been a bit of a disaster playing fantasy Arsenal this season.
You couldn't really drop them either because they have this home fixture to Bournemouth next game week. And so, you know, I mean, it actually worked out well in the end because I think the obvious move would have been to turn one of them into a Liverpool midfielder. And Liverpool kind of spent that whole Southampton match shaking the rust off. Like, I mean, if that was Liverpool, it's like another example of why the international breaks are so frustrating. Because going into the international break, Liverpool dropped 6 on Watford. You feel like if that match had gone on like another 30 minutes, they might have scored like 10 goals in that game. And they were just totally dominant with no sign of stopping. But, you know, they send their two best players away to Brazil. And even though Firmino barely played when he was over there, I think he played like 15 minutes total or something.
Josh, you think Mesut Ozil had gone to Brazil the way he looked against United?
I know he had everyone was sharing his like one good pass, but it was like, listen, like, yeah, you did nutmeg a 35-year-old, but in general, he didn't have a very good game.
It was an interesting transfer week for me. I got rid of Ibrahimovic to bring in Lukaku, that was just a transfer out of fear. I was afraid of what he was going to do against Swansea. So I saw you Friday night and we were talking about our transfers and you said, well, burn 4 and turn Lallana into Firmino. And I'm thinking it's going to be a down week, generally low point scoring international break. I don't want to burn 4 on a player that is coming back from a long travel, may not do well. And of course that bore out, but now I'm in this position of, well, why didn't I just burn 4 in a week that really I wasn't going to do anything in?
Right.
And I'd be sitting a little prettier here now. But no, actually, my biggest regret is bringing Lukaku in for Ibrahimovic, because we're going to talk about heavy hitting strikers later in the podcast. But what I wouldn't give to have Ibra instead of Lukaku right now.
Or Diego Costa. I mean, I don't know if you watched the Chelsea match, but you must have been so, like, I mean, for Costa to be scoring those kind of goals, I mean, coming out of a break, I mean, he is just, he might win the Golden Boot this year. Like, he is completely dialed in right now. And I think he's just going to keep hanging that four yellow cards over everybody and kind of taunting all of us cowardly fantasy managers who don't want to bring him in.
It's true. And again, we'll talk about Lukaku versus Costa in a little bit, but I'm still not ready. And to my detriment, I'm still not ready to get on the Costa train. I mean, I had Costa earlier and got rid of him when the getting rid of seemed good.
So my two transfers worked out very well. I was very happy with them. I moved Raheem Sterling into Eden Hazard. I did it actually on Saturday of last week to get ahead of some price changes. And, you know, I think since then, I think Hazard is up at least 0.4 and I think Sterling's down like 3 points, like 3 total points. It's like somehow he's like you're not supposed to be able to go down 0.3, but he's down like one whole point or something in the last week.
It's a tremendous disappearing act by this guy.
Yeah, totally is. So I dropped him for Hazard, and I got the very rare one bonus point. It was the kind of match where that kind of thing can happen, because a couple Chelsea defenders got yellow cards. And there was only one goal, but it was unassisted. And so I was fine with 4 points from Hazard. And then the big move, though, was I dropped Virgil van Dijk for Alan Niam, which I was feeling a little nervous about when van Dijk drops. I mean, there's no way you could have predicted that Liverpool wouldn't score a goal. I mean, they had two breakaway chances on Saturday. I mean, they really should have scored at least a single goal.
Coutinho botched that Firmino-Coutinho breakaway. I guess a number of chances they let slip by.
But so I brought in Niam, and I was kind of sweating it out a little bit, but then Niam picks up 11 points in today's fixture. So I turned what would have been, I guess, 9 points into 15 points. So it was net 6, and I like the way both those moves set me up. I mean, having Eden Hazard, you know, when I bought him at 9.9, and so now I think he's already up to 10.3. So it feels good to just kind of have him and lock him in, because he looked really good in the match on Sunday anyway. So, and Niam at 4.3 million, I mean, I have to imagine he's going to be due for a price rise or two this week, because a 4.3 million defender who's, I suppose, we were actually talking about this a little bit before the podcast started. There's some question about whether he's actually going to be a starter long term, but it just feels like complete speculation, because I mean he started 7 matches in a row. By all, you know, all the comments that the manager have made, it seems like he's pretty safe, you know. So I don't really know what the concern is here. I mean, and he's actually playing him at right back instead of his natural spot. So or is it the other way around?
He's on the left.
Yeah, he's on the left instead of right.
Right.
So left. Yeah. No, I'm confused.
I'm doing a little Abbott and Costello with you right now.
So, you know, what's funny is I guess because I grew up as a baseball fan, I can tell you like every major player, if they're lefty or righty, but with soccer players, I can never remember if anybody's left footed or right footed. It's like, I can't lock it into my brain somehow. But anyway, so Niam to me he has two natural fullback positions. And he played, I was sort of joking. You said you weren't able to watch tonight's match, and I was joking that he looked like Jesus Navas down the stretch. I mean, he was just like rampaging down the flank and, just beating this Burnley team that they kind of gave up 5 minutes into the match. And, so it was, so I feel pretty good about having him as well. So 49 points all told, in green arrows across the board.
I had what is a very rare experience with me and a Premier League match. You had G-chatted me about 35 minutes into the first half of West Brom Burnley, and you said, "What's up with this Burnley defense?" And yeah. I thought, "Well, that's a speculative comment." So I don't, or not, I didn't really realize the game had started, and I looked at my clock and thought, "Oh my God, the first half's almost over." I'd forgotten the game was even going on. It never. Yeah. Ever happens, no matter how sort of unappealing the fixture may be.
Yeah, this is a busy. I don't know about you, but I'm sure this is true of a lot of managers. This my real life is incredibly busy around this time of the year, especially work, because everyone knows work starts to kind of. It kind of spins down a little bit, you know, like into December. And so I feel like this, like the last couple weeks of November are always crazy for me. I've got like a million different things I'm trying to do. So, you know,
so,
I don't know.
So, Josh, you mentioned that you got rid of Virgil van Dijk, and it reminds me of something we were also talking about not long ago about players in the Premier League that, for whatever reason, you just kind of like them. they just give you a good feeling. Like, maybe it's not because you associate them with the previous fantasy season or you think that they're an integral player to the team. It's just somebody who you watch and you think you'd like to hang out with them.
I think it started earlier this season. We were talking about Yannick Bolasie, and I was just saying that I just like watching Yannick Bolasie play. He plays a lot of energy and a lot of joy. And I mean, he's a good player too, and it's always fun to watch a player who's really athletic and fast, but it just seems like he likes to be out there.
Yeah.
You know, when he basically took that goal off the ball of Lukaku, or he took the ball off the foot of Lukaku and scored a goal like 3 or 4 weeks ago, like they might as well have just benched him because he was so excited that he basically couldn't play the rest of the match. He was like bouncing. It was like a kid with too much sugar. He was just way too excited.
I was thinking about this too, and I thought, yeah, I tend to be drawn to players who look like they're having fun, sort of like the Juan Mata effect.
Right.
He just looks like a little kid out there. But then, conversely, I agree. Like Virgil van Dijk, one of my favorite players in the league. If only, like, he looks like he should be on the Star Trek Enterprise because he looks so freaking competent in his job. The expression on his face is like, I know how to do it. Just trust me. It'll be fine.
Speaking of Juan Mata, did you see someone commented on Twitter this weekend? So he got the yellow card after he scored the goal. And okay. it was because he'd gone into the crowd after he scored the goal. And someone said it was the most Juan Mata moment ever to get a yellow card for hugging.
that's good. I didn't even know you would get a yellow card for going into the crowd.
I guess it does make sense, right? I mean, it's kind of a waste. Like, it's a time-wasting thing, maybe.
What if
excessive celebration?
What if you go into the crowd plus take your shirt off? Is that two yellows and a red, and you're off?
I think you're out for the season. That's wow. It's a 30 match ban.
They just send you straight to China.
We talked about this earlier, and so yeah, Sandy Cazorla is also one who fits in there, but I'm curious, we're gonna put this out to the listeners, send us a message on Facebook or Twitter. Who are the players that you just like? Just fantasy aside, who do you just enjoy watching? I feel like I'm in so deep with the fantasy game at this point. It's almost hard for me to just watch a match. Like I actually like it sometimes when we have what we used to call a pure watch.
Yeah.
You know, a game where there's no stakes. There's almost no fantasy implications involved, and you can just watch the match.
I truly can't think of a match so far this season that's been a real pure watch.
It hasn't felt that way. I know. Maybe the next time that Hull play, who would Hull have to play? Like, maybe Hull Burnley would be pretty close to a pure watch. But even then, I guess, maybe Hull Burnley.
Burnley, there's a lot of people out there with Tom Heaton and goal who would start him.
I was saying maybe if like Diamande scored a goal early in Hull Burnley, for like from then on it'd be a pure watch, right? So Heaton loses, or Heaton.
What about the 65% of managers who play Sam Vokes every week? What about them?
True. Forgot about the Volkswagen. That's true.
Should we give the rundown of the managers who matter, the top 10 of the Hail Cheater Super League through game week 12?
Let's do it. And I'm going to turn this over to you once again, Brandon, because you can pronounce people's names, and I can't. So
I claim to. So let me take a ceremonial sip of water here. Glug, glug, glug. All right. After game week 12, in first place, Arshan Badawala, his squad A-team, scored 47 points on the game week. In second place, the Reykjavik Runners, that's Barta Waltha Hegelson's team. Third place, dropping a few, was David Fellheim in first place last week? First or second, it looks like he was.
I think so.
So his squad, the Cuddly Koala, is now in third. In fourth, it's Heat and Me for Mignolet, William Sutton's squad, scoring 36 on the game week. Fifth place, Billich's Beauties, Matt Floyd. Sixth place, Lads on Torre, Nick Forrester, scored 41 points this season.
Staying in the top 10. I feel like, has Nick been in the top 10 the entire season? I feel like he's been right up there all year.
It's the longest lasting Torre in history. U2 hasn't been on Torre this long.
That's true. The Rolling Stones themselves have not been on Torre that long.
Seventh place, BTSTU, our pal Mitch Maynard. And if you haven't been on our Twitter feed recently, you can see an oldie but a goodie from Mitch Maynard. He did a Photoshop of Chris Brunt starring in the movie Brunt. So go find us at Hail Cheaters on Twitter and see Mitch Mater's handiwork. Sadly for Mitch, he drops down to seventh place this week with a showing of 34 points. Eighth place, Clichy's Clean Sheets. That's Fabio Borges' squad. Ninth place, Dermatolitis, Kem Vardar. And rounding out the top 10, it's Bacon Sane, Tim O'Sullivan.
Well done, Tim. Is that? I think that's a new entry in the top 10. So congratulations to Bacon Sane.
You think that's a play on a bacon sandwich, or is that some sort of a special sort of
English thing that we don't get?
It may be. You're never too late to join the Hail Cheater Super League. Just go to our league page on alwayscheating.com. There's an auto join button there, and our league code is everywhere online where we are.
Brandon, we've come to our meltdowns of the week. It was a very strange week, Brandon. I had a tweet that I sent out on Saturday, which I realized how true it was after I wrote it. That
did you say, "Whoa, I've got a bad feeling about this"?
There's something about anytime there's a game week where you think to yourself, there are way too many great captain options. And in fact, I think we said as much in the last podcast. We said, well, you know, Lukaku at home or Aguero away to
Crystal Palace.
Yeah, Aguero away to Crystal Palace. I mean, they're going to score a bunch of goals either way. So you're probably going to get 13 points apiece and it's going to be fine.
Go back and listen to our last episode and we ultimately landed on Yaya Toure. You can bank that one.
We thought in a Yaya Toure and Achebe, you could triple captain either one, and we were fine with that. Anytime there's a game week where there seems like there are too many great captain options, it seems like none of them come through. I suppose you could argue that Diego Costa came through, but I don't really remember a lot of managers. To me, he wasn't one of the most talked about players for this game week. I mean, he had a bit of an injury issue for one thing, and there were probably some better options. So,
right, and Diego Costa, for as in form as he is, just perpetually scoring goals, he always has a problem with bonus points, which just sort of psychologically makes it harder to put the armband on him.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they're playing a team that can play well at times, you know, so it was just kind of a strange match.
So which leads us to our meltdowns.
Back to the meltdowns.
We'll rename meltdowns of the week to Chelsea Talk.
Yeah. Josh talks about Middlesbrough's defense. All right. Uppercut Panza says, I currently have a game week rank of 4,020,050. That just says it all. This is not a rant. It's dejection from a crushing defeat.
You know, I got to say this. I really like Uppercut Panda. He's very nice to us on social media, and he's fun to just chat with. Actually exchanged a couple tweets about him on Friday night about he was watching a dumb cricket match, and I was watching a dumb basketball match. But after I found out what Uppercut Panda's game week rank is, I have to really reconsider how I interact with him.
You might drop the friendship.
I might drop it.
Well, maybe this will make him feel better. Jeremiah Johnson says, my game week rank is 3,46,549. I panicked and knee-jerk and went minus 12, doing two transfers Saturday night and two more Sunday morning. Maybe I can freak out again before midnight tonight and squeeze in another two. I've never done a panic four transfer before. I've done a panic point burn where I was so sick of a player that I dropped him and I was like, I don't care if I lose 4 points.
It's always I feel like the bigger the burn, the earlier it happens in the game week, right? Because you're so sick of your team immediately following a poor performance that you're quick to hit the panic button.
I think that's why Sterling fell so much last week. I think every Sterling manager was just like, we all gave up at the same time.
Yeah, no. I mean, now Jeremiah Johnson's. Their game week rank. So I just realized, Josh, that going back to Uppercut Panda, he's actually talking about his game week rank, not his overall rank, 4 million.
If you're playing since game week one and you're ranked 4 million, you would have to be burning like 40 points every game week.
All right, Uppercut Panda. Friendship back on.
bring him back on.
Jeremiah Johnson, you're cool too.
Jukamon says 19 points in my first 11, 17 points on the bench. Can any other listeners top that for a shitty week? I can't top that, but I actually had 21 points on my bench this week, which is definitely – I feel like – I doubt even in a double game week I'm going to be able to get 21 points off my bench.
Yeah, I just had 6 points on my bench, so no. I mean, I was one of the proud and the few that still was able to field Etienne Capoue in my midfield, who you usually rely on for points on your bench.
All right. AMHA United, much like a college football player making his Twitter pledge to a college or whatever, he wrote on his iPhone and then sent us the, like, a screenshot of what he wrote. So let me just see if I can. There's a lot of stuff going on. He's going through a lot, Brandon. He's cycling through a lot of emotions.
Let's hear him out. I'm sure all our listeners can probably relate to what he's
going. I was trying to find a way to shorten it, but just you can skip ahead to the 45-minute mark if you want.
Yeah.
Transferred out Sanchez, Mane, and Dini and replaced them with Coutinho, Hazard, and the Volkswagen for -8 points. That did not work out. Coutinho and Hazard blank, and Dini gets an assist. Aguero, Lukaku, Walcott, and Kass all blanked. Now, to be fair, that affected almost everybody. Debated with myself about who I was going to choose between Allen or Capoue. I choose Allen, and of course, Capoue scores a goal and gets 3 bonus points. Allen also got suspended for the next game week. Had Pickford on the bench as well. Why do I play this game? Interabang.
It's the unanswerable question why we play this game.
So, we actually didn't get to this earlier, but, you know, so I look at your midfield first thing on Saturday morning. I'm like, I'm going to win this week. Like, if I get anything at all from my Liverpool players, I'm going to win this week. And then, like, 3 minutes into all of – there's, like, you know, like 8 fixtures or whatever on Saturday. 3 minutes into the Watford game, Capoue scores. I mean, you
wasn't
had to be
like 33 seconds into the Watford game.
Was it that early? Yeah, it was. Yeah, exactly. I was watching the whatever they have at NBC here, where the goal rush.
Okay, yeah. So the goal rush on Saturday morning, it started off with a bang. You got an immediate Watford goal. But the second half of that midday round of fixtures was the most existential goal rush of all time because there were no goals being scored. I was just watching the Liverpool match.
I was texting you during the second half because I had a screaming baby, and so I was actually walking around outside, and I was literally just refreshing Twitter like a maniac while she was in the baby carrier,
mm-hmm.
and that's bringing her outside is the only thing that make me go to sleep. So I had to sacrifice the second half, but I'm actually glad that I did because I think it would have driven me crazy if I'd seen how many chances Coutinho and Firmino missed in the second half.
So I want to ask a real question to you, Josh, and our listeners. Am I responsible for the Volkswagen? Did I do this to everyone?
Well, you were as responsible as anybody. I mean, I'm just saying we have a reasonably popular podcast, more than reasonably popular, I'd say. It's a lot of listeners. And you have been talking about Vokes basically since game week one. So you've been the most vocal Vokes supporter since game week one.
Vocal folks for Vokes, absolutely. I mean, it was ever since he scored that goal against Liverpool that I thought this guy could possibly be better than Gray.
And so it took him, you know, to be fair, he went 7 or 8 weeks without doing anything.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, so much so that Jamie Dean at Mac Milne on Twitter sent us this amazing Photoshop of Vokes transforming from a Volkswagen into a robot Sam Vokes. It's incredible.
You inspired art, Brandon.
I did. Okay, so I'll take it at that, you know.
Yeah.
I won't take the blame for Vokes sort of screwing everyone's game week, but I'll take credit for enriching people's lives.
Yeah, I mean he's a cheap third forward, you know. It's he's in that Anna Chibé Barrow category. You know, you can't expect that much from a sub 6 million.
Yeah, nearly forward. Had an assist. Had I forget who the other one was on the other end of that headed would be assist by Vokes, who kind of fluffed it. But yeah, Vokes could have been in the points.
Yeah, could have been. Brandon, let's take a break. We have two topics for today's episode. The topic number one is heavy hitter forwards. We're going to talk about the very expensive, I think this is still at like the 9.5 plus category of forwards, and just sort of compare them and talk about what the fixtures look like, who you might want to bring in, who you might want to keep. I mean, I think a lot of people are really kind of freaking out right now because Aguero has been so up and down this season, and what do you do with Lukaku because he's blanked the last couple of game weeks and so on. And then section two, we're actually just – trying to find something original for this – original content for this week's episode. And so what we're going to do is we're going to look at whether there's any value in the teams that are in the relegation spots right now. We call this section sewer dwelling. Where is the FPL value in the relegation slots? So we're going to look at Sunderland. We're going to look at Hull. And we're going to look at Swansea City and just see if there's any value to be found there because these guys are all kind of cheap and actually all three teams have pretty good fixtures coming up.
I love the sewer dwelling. It's like we're going to form a team of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles out of guys from relegation squads.
Exactly.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. We'll see you in a second. Same old podcast,
always cheating. Okay, we're back. And in this section, as Josh, you said, we're going to talk about who is our main man. Lots of questions here about Aguero, about his form. Will he play? Will he won't play? So we're going to just talk about I guess we have five main strikers here. We've got Brock Toon, a.k.a. Sergio Aguero. Diego Da Silva Costa. He plays for Chelsea. Big Rom. Big Rom. Mm-hmm. Plays for the Toffees. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any guesses as to who the next one is?
Is it Harold of Canenberg?
Harold of Canington. Close. Nice try.
He
plays for the Hotspuds. And just for fun, there it is, Zlatan. So yeah. Zlatan just gets into this list based on how much he costs.
Yeah, he cheekily backheeled his way into this list.
He did. Oh, I have to, speaking of Zlatan, I have to recommend everyone go to our blog at alwayscheating.com and click the blog tab. I just posted the first poem from our Always Cheating poet laureate, Lucian Madison, and he's written a whole poem about Zlatan Ibrahimovic titled
"That's Beautified.
Zlatan I have 69 Touches in the Box."
I'm very excited about this. I have not read this poem yet. I'm really excited to check that out.
It's epic. It's imagine Zlatan as Beowulf.
So, Brandon, I thought, okay, so we have a couple of questions here. Let's run through a couple of those real quick. Magnus Westerstrand says, City making me crazy, gonna sell Aguero. Shane Deere says, is removing Kuhn something you consider if he blanks again this game week? Lojun On says, does bringing in Kane for Aguero make sense? Always fancied that fellow to score against his London clubs. So I think a lot of people are driven a little crazy right now by all of the rotation with Aguero. And I think a lot of us don't have Costa in particular. And I think we're feeling a little trapped. I know that I am.
Wouldn't you say the popular lineup right now is Brock Toon, Lukaku, and a cheapish third, right?
It is. It gets the problem that I have that I think a lot of managers have, which is that I actually bought Lukaku. I think he was 8.9 million when I brought him in. He had actually dipped from his starting price. Now I think he's at 9.9 million. So it feels like a huge gamble. I actually have the money. I could move Lukaku to Costa this game week without burning any points. But, I once you do that, there's no going back. I've lost so much team value as a result of making that move. And so I'm a little reluctant to do it for that reason. I feel like I still want to keep the faith of Lukaku a little bit. But it is frustrating to see him kind of back to his troll Kaku tendencies.
The team around him, that Everton team, isn't really doing him any favors. I mean, the great Bolasie would-be assist over the weekend where he basically shot the ball directly at Lukaku's thigh. It's like, here, you put this in.
They showed that so many times in replay as if he had as if it was putt-putt golf and the ball was at the lip of the hole and all you had to do was blow in it. Just tap, tap, tappy. That ball was going 200 miles per hour at his midsection.
Yeah.
And all he could do was react. I mean, you know, if he had scored that, it would have been a great goal. Like, there was no – yeah, that was not an easy opportunity at all.
Well, okay, so here's what I had to say about Brock Toon real quick, and then you can tell me how you feel. But I feel like if Aguero scores this weekend against, if he had scored against Crystal Palace this weekend, we wouldn't even be considering dropping him, right? Because then game week 10 against West Brom, he's got two goals and an assist. Middlesbrugger, he scores a goal, should actually have had a brace. So I'm just not convinced that there are that many worrying signs. That said, if he fails to score against Burnley, there are too many of these tempting options that we're talking about. I'm waiting until after Burnley to make up my mind.
Yeah. So the Champions League is interesting. They play on Wednesday. It's kind of an important match. They play Borussia, you know,
Mönchengladbach,
insert your five-syllable word. And it's kind of an important match because they're in second place in that the Champions League group, and I think they're on 7 points, and Mönchengladbach's on 4. So it's kind of a must win game for them, I would say. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily must win, but I think if they win, it would seal their spot. And in fact, I know that it would. So they're probably going to have to play Aguero in that game week or in that match. So. You know, Aguero goes away to Argentina. I know he doesn't play, but he still travels. Mm-hmm. Plays almost the entire match in Crystal Palace. Plays against Borussia Mönchengladbach, and then they're away to Burnley. I mean, he could come off the bench in that match. It wouldn't be inconceivable.
Possibly. Having Pep Guardiola as the manager changes this discussion, because we have this every season with City in the Champions League, and we always wonder if there's going to be a rotation, but there never is with Aguero.
Right.
But yeah,
because
Pep does complicate it, because we don't really know what he's capable of yet.
I had it with Sterling last game week, and I know a lot of managers felt that way with Gundogan this game week.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing, wasn't it? I thought about bringing Gundogan in. I mean, it seemed like it made sense. I mean, a way to cross a Palace and Burnley back to back.
I mean, it's Liverpool. Yeah, it's Liverpool last season all over again, where Klopp was rotating that squad all over the place for the Europa League. It's just
that's
one thing that makes Aguero even more appealing to me, is that I think of all of the players there at City, he's the one that would be least likely to be rotated.
This is a little off topic, but does KDB turn your head at all? Are you still, like, do you wish you had him? Would you like to bring him in at some point?
I really don't. I think I said this last week. And maybe you'll laugh at me, but I still think it's true that I think Robert Snodgrass is basically the same player as KDB is right now in the Premier League. So why not have KDB at half the price?
Well, KDB has been good, but not great so far this season. I mean, he's been quite good. I don't want to undersell KDB. It does seem like, for whatever reason, he's not a player that a lot of managers own. I think his price makes him a little.
Oh, it's entirely his price, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's up to 10.8 now. I mean,
he was like an Ozil level price tag, you know, I might sing a different tune.
Yeah, I mean, he's 10.8 million. He is the fifth highest scoring midfielder. He's below Hazard, Coutinho, Sanchez, and Firmino. Three out of four of those players are cheaper than De Bruyne. And I feel like if you're an 11 million midfielder, you have to be scoring. You basically have to be out of position. You got to be a forward, basically playing as a midfielder, basically playing as a forward, don't you? I mean, it's really. How many assists do you think KDB has in the season, Brandon?
Four.
He has 9.
Whoa. Oh my god!
Yeah, he in fact had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He assisted 5 games in a row, and he had 2 assists one of those matches.
All right,
and he's assisted in the last 3 matches. So he has 9 assists and 2 goals in the season.
Maybe I'm sleeping on Kev. Maybe I just haven't actually opened up his profile all season.
I mean, just when you can bring in two Liverpool players who are both in the 8 millions, it's kind of hard to look at KDB.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Liverpool is just a more expensive Leicester City this season.
Yeah.
Dave Aston asks, Kane v. Costa, that is all. So if you had to choose, Josh, going into game week 13, let's not look backwards. Let's look forwards.
Okay.
Would you take Costa, who's on a yellow card suspension tightrope, but also in the best scoring form in the league? Or would you take Harry Kane, marginally back from injury?
Right. And I did watch the Spurs West Ham game, which it was a very strange match. I felt very bad for West Ham, although you have to blame Bilic, I think, for basically having the game in hand and then deciding that Dimitri Payet's expendable.
From Norway.
Yeah, let's bring out our guy. I think he won a contest. It was like a guy. It was like a radio call-in thing or something. So they bring in this contest winner in the 85th minute.
And he just decides to start slide tackling all over the penalty box. What could go wrong?
The game goes to complete hell almost immediately. It was so cowardly of him. Like, I mean, you saw the same thing in the Man U Arsenal match. I mean, when you are winning a game, like, there's 8 minutes left. Like, I hate this like idea. Like, all right, we're going to shut it down now. We're not going to go with what worked. We're not going to go with what, you know, got us the win. We're going to, you know, like rein it all in and just try to hold on for dear life for the final 10 minutes.
Okay. I don't know if you remember that this was like in the early days of the internet where there was like one video clip for everyone on planet Earth to watch at once. And there was one making the rounds of a high school basketball game in which in this high school league, there was no shot clock. So usually if a team has the ball, they've got 35 seconds to shoot the ball. There was no shot clock. So this team, they shoot a basket, they score, they play defense, they get the ball back, and they just hang on to the ball for the rest of the game.
It feels uncompetitive, doesn't it, to play that kind of style? It feels the same way in professional sports. So anyway, in that match, I actually didn't think that Harry Kane looked very good at all the first 85 minutes of the match. And honestly, both the goals he scored, I mean, the first goal he scored was kind of a lucky goal. I mean, you know, he was in a good position, I guess, but it wasn't like he created the chance.
No, Son created that chance. It was put on a silver platter for Kane.
Exactly. And the second goal was a penalty. So, the goal he scored against Arsenal.
That penalty into the corner.
He's always been a great penalty taker. So, I think if you're going based on just what we've seen so far, which you kind of have to, I mean, to an extent, you have to go with Costa. But the caveat here is that after this away match to Chelsea in game week 13, which honestly doesn't even scare me that much, because, you know, the one thing I love about Harry Kane, and I am an Arsenal fan, but I do like Harry Kane. He's very fearless in these big matches. I feel like he really doesn't. He plays very well in big matches. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him score in that Chelsea match. But then after the Chelsea match, they have Swansea, Hull, and Burnley all at home in three of the next four. And I don't know how you can not have a Spurs player in those three, for those three game weeks. I mean, I would feel very naked not having a Spurs player in those games.
As pretty a picture as that might be, Josh. I went to Fantasy Football Scout and did a side-by-side stats comparison of Diego Costa versus Kane over the last 2 weeks, and Costa blows Kane away. He's preferred by the algorithm 75%. Likewise with Lukaku, looking at the last four game weeks, Costa is 70% favored over Lukaku. So it's really no mystery here that Costa is, with the stats and with the goals, the best form striker. But yeah, I agree. It's down to how you feel about the fixtures coming up.
So I think we have a couple more. Maybe we just have one more question here. Ashir Ran Khan said, I was thinking about getting Kane and Achebe and Cedric instead of Lukaku, Austin, and Stones. What are your views? So who would you rather have, bro? Would you rather have Kane and Achebe and Cedric or Lukaku, Austin, and Stones? Oh, it feels so radically different.
They do. I would definitely want Lukaku, Austin, and Stones. And let me tell you why, Josh.
Okay.
Tough fixtures, I guess, for Lukaku and Austin's fixtures. Let's just pull them up real quick. Are great. They have Everton, and then it's Crystal Palace, Middlesbrough, Stoke, Bournemouth. And then John Stones. So we kind of touched upon City's form here coming out of the Champions League. I would expect that squad to really tighten up. And assuming Stones actually plays, and I mean, how sad? Okay, how sad is John Stones? Even sadder still, there will always be a sadder story than John Stones in the defensive line of Manchester City. It's Vincent Kompany. When I saw that he was subbed off injured this weekend, I can't believe they still field him. Like, it,
I know it's, you know, but they do it. I mean, you look at someone like Johnny Evans, who couldn't stay healthy for years, and now he's kind of, I guess he's righted the ship a little bit. So I don't know. Maybe he needs like a year off. He needs like a year to rest.
You know, hasn't he had a year at this point?
28. I know. It poor company. I really used to like watching him play. He's almost in one of those that he's in the Virgil Van Dyke category where he could just single-handedly destroy another team when he was, you know, at his best. All right. So if you had to rank these, let's wrap this with a little ranking, Brandon. All right.
Okay.
So we've got these five forwards: Lukaku, Kane, Aguero, Ibra, and Costa. If you had to have two of these forwards through the Christmas fixtures, let's say you have two heavy hitters, and then you've got a Charlie Austin type, or maybe you're going 3-5-2 when you're going to go with a you know, strong midfield. Mm-hmm. Which two players would you want to have out of these five?
Immediately, my gut reaction is Costa and Harry Kane.
Interesting. Okay. My gut reaction was Aguero and Costa.
Okay.
And yeah, and I think I would put Kane third just because his fixtures are so good. And then I guess I would put – we kind of saw this with Kane last year, you know, where he had kind of a slow start. And then he, you know, really came on the second half of the season. I guess I would – and then I would put Lukaku fourth and Ibrahimovic fifth.
I'm tempted to put Ibra over Lukaku. And maybe it's just buyer's remorse that I'm experiencing with Lukaku right now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, don't forget about Zlatan. He had that brace against Swansea, and then it all immediately came crashing down with his fifth yellow card. But their run of fixtures for United coming up all through the end of the year, it's really sensational. Yeah. Apart from Spurs in game week 15, it's just all green, bright green fixtures.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And you just can't have them all, though. So I think that – and this is why, by the way, I don't necessarily want to go with a 3-5-2 rotation. I just think it's a little – we're going to get – there's actually a couple of questions about this we'll get to later. But I just think that there are often times when you need to have three heavy-hitting forwards, and there's just no getting around it because their fixtures are so good. And I think we might actually be coming upon that in the Christmas fixtures. And so it's an interesting time.
I think
we live in interesting times right now.
Well, I think the reason I picked Kane too, just real quickly, I think this is interesting for people to think about, is which one of these five is going to be the biggest surprise by the end of the year? Because right now we're just trying to templatize our front three. I mean, we still have a third striker that you can sort of have as your differential. But right, which one of these is going to be the one that's going to help you gain 25, 50 points in your mini league? And that, again, draws me to Harry Kane.
Well, that is fair. I mean, I guess the flip side of that is, now that Costa's ownership is up to like 40%, can you risk not having him? If he has this great run of fixtures, and he's probably going to be scoring a goal or two in nearly every one of these matches.
It's true. Now we're getting into really, really tricky territory. Like, if Costa scores a goal but nobody sees it, does it count?
Yeah. I mean, I was having a great game week, and you know, just because Costa got 9 points on Sunday, it really hurt my overall rank. I mean, I was up almost 200,000 after Saturday, and then I was only up about 100,000 after that because everyone who had him just shot ahead of me, even with Hazard.
All right, everyone, take to our Twitter account and our Facebook page and rank these five guys in your order of preference: Lukaku, Kane, Aguero, Ibra, and Costa. Yeah. Do that at HailCheaters or Facebook.com/alwayscheating. Okay, Josh, let's take a quick break, and then we're coming back with our sewer-dwelling section.
How can anyone wait?
Same old podcast, always cheating.
We're on to topic two of two, sewer-dwelling. Where is the FPL value in the relegation slots? There's kind of two ways that you can make up points or sort of shoot ahead of teams in your mini leagues. One is to find a guy like Harry Kane and bring him back, you know, when he's back from injury or back in form or whatever. And the other way is to kind of dig around in these, where where the prices are cheap and you don't really know what you're going to get. You might get lucky with Anachieve for a little while. You might end up with a Stephen DeFore. You don't really know what you're going to get.
That's life in the sewers of the FPL, my friend.
That's life in the sewers. But I've been thinking about this guy. I've been thinking about Jermaine Defoe and how hilariously underrated he's been this season.
I would agree with that. I wouldn't agree with that categorization.
7 goals, 2 assists, 14 bonus points in the season. He's been scoring, particularly in the last couple of weeks. I mean, he's averaged over 1 bonus point a game, and he's averaging more than half a goal per game right now. Just bossing around. I mean, the whole Sunderland attack is run through him, and he's linked up really well with Duncan Watmore, of all people. Duncan Watmore, who went to college. And
imagine that.
So I've been thinking about, we all kind of went for Charlie Austin a few weeks ago, but it turns out Jermaine Defoe was right there, a very similar price point. And
this is like the end of Jerry Maguire.
He was right in front of us the whole time. So let's talk about, okay, I want to talk about the three, just to narrow things down here a little bit. I want to talk about the three teams that are actually in the relegation slots right at this moment. So that's Sunderland, Hull, and Swansea City. Let's start with Sunderland, Brandon. Have you been watching any Sunderland? You got a clean sheet this game week.
I did. Pickford in goal. That was glorious times. I haven't watched any Sunderland since watching them utterly capitulate against Everton. But
nine game weeks ago?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. And there's been nothing to watch since then. But what is it? Two wins in a row for Moyes' squad?
Yep, they look pretty good.
So can they keep it up is the question. And I see no reason why they wouldn't be able to. They've got a decent, experienced manager in David Moyes. And they do have great players that have proven themselves across multiple seasons, particularly Jermaine Defoe and Patrick Van Aanholt, who has always been a wild card FPL asset. And
don't sleep on college boy Duncan Watmore, Brandon.
No,
I pledge Watmore. For Watmore.
Of the Sunderland players, I think Van Aanholt might be my top pick.
Okay, well, Pickford too. I mean, Pickford's 4.1 million. I think by most accounts, he will not be losing his spot to Mignone when he comes back. I mean, Mignone might even actually be. I think if you didn't have Jordan Pickford, Mignone might actually be playing already. And so I think he's probably going to keep that spot. We had a couple questions about Anachieve and about playing a 3-5-2 formation. He's kind of the perfect third striker at a 3-5-2. Mitchell Badhurst had said, would you consider a 3-5-2 now that Anachieve as a 4.5 striker has emerged? Considering the first sub's 4.5 attacker is better than a 4.5 defensive mid in terms of attacking FPL returns. Richard Orford, a longtime friend of the podcast, says, hi guys, looking forward to the pod. I'm going Maverick this game week with a 5-3-2 formation. Do you still consider 3-4-3 as the default? So I do, but I don't think that default to me just means that is typically the best formation. I don't want to be so conservative that I wouldn't play a 3-5-2 or that I wouldn't even play a 5-3-2 possibly. I'm willing to adapt given the situation, but I have a self-control problem when I play in a 3-5-2 or I don't know if I've ever actually like really plan to play a 5-3-2, but yeah. Basically a formation with two strikers. And the problem is it's very hard for me not to play that third striker, especially if they're in good form.
Right. Yeah, it's so much easier for a striker to be in. I mean, it's the hardest thing to do in football is to score a goal, but it's so much easier to pick out an informed striker as it is to pick out a clean sheet. Even with form defense, anything could go wrong at any moment and you lose that clean sheet. That's why I feel like the 3-4-3, it's basically like the blackjack of formations. Those are your highest odds of winning, I think,
right,
with that
right.
formation. So, if you're a great FPL manager, you're one that can pick out the right game week to play an oddball formation and make it work. But, I played a 4-3-3 this week and it just happened to be yet another week where there were no clean sheets apart from
right.
Sunderland and West Brom. I was lucky enough that's where my points came from, but it's so hard to play on clean sheets.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And I just think that it's just so much easier to find three. things are a little skewed this year because I think it's mostly because of the Liverpool midfielders and because they've been scoring so much, not just assisting, but actually scoring goals so often. It's very tempting to have two Liverpool midfielders and suddenly add Eden Hazard and maybe Alexis Sanchez. And suddenly the midfield looks like the place where you want all your money to go, you know? And so I think that it's tempting, but I like having Darren Fletcher as my fifth midfielder, the goal scoring Darren Fletcher. It simplifies my decisions. I don't know. I mean, I feel like I don't mind having a fourth defender come in. I feel like 3-5-2 has not traditionally worked for me. It doesn't mean that I'm opposed to it, but I feel like once I'm committed to a 3-5-2, which I definitely have done many times over the years, you know, for three or four game weeks or whatever, often at the end of a season when I'm trying to catch up or, you know, just trying to turn my game week around or whatever, turn my like run of bed form around. I feel like the second I commit to it, I'm trying to get out of it.
Right.
You know, like I'm already like trying to look for an exit ramp.
Well, let's go back to this. We're not delving into the sewer enough here, Josh. Let's go back to this. The guy who started this conversation, the 4.5 striker Anacebe. So I was telling you before we started recording that I believe him to be Etienne Capoue to the power of 10. Like there's yep. I can't imagine a world in which he keeps up this strike rate. And we talked about this many, many, many episodes ago, even before the season started, when we were going through our 10 rules for FPL success, and to beware of the cheap third striker. Mm-hmm. If you build your team around Anacebe at 4.5 and you start to put that vice on that position, you're going to find yourself at least two moves away from getting Anacebe out of that position to free up some cash to turn a 4.5 striker into someone as cheap as Sam Vokes, who's at least 6 million.
Right, exactly. It really limits your options, I think. And it limits your options, in the place where you least want to have limited options. You want to have options in the forward line because they are forwards for a reason. I don't want to get down like the road of like modern pressing styles and, you know, contemporary formations and stuff like that. But like in general, a striker's goal is to score goals sort of above and beyond anything else. And so that's where you want to have your FPL money invested in general. But I guess it is a little different this year given, I mean, we just talked about five great, you know, striking options, and there are a ton of options in that kind of middle tier, Defoe, Austin, et cetera. And I don't know. I don't want to give up on those players just to have, you know, Gylfi Sigurdsson in for the next few game weeks.
Do you think Defoe is a little too expensive at 7.4 million?
Well, he's a little too expensive, but not.
He was priced so high just coming into the season, I thought.
Well, because last year he had kind of a sneaky good season, too. He probably started at 7, and now he's up to 7.4. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's not outrageous. I think it's, like, pretty fair. I mean, that's still, like, 0.5 cheaper than Raheem Sterling is.
Okay, Josh, let's talk about Hull. The prospects here for Hull City, the team that is finally become the dumpster fire that everyone predicted earlier, before the season started, they beat Leicester. We've got a few options. Robert Snodgrass, the snot is God, 5.6 million. And on down the line, Marshall. Who's this? The right. Deceased filmmaker, Gary Marshall?
David Marshall, the goalkeeper.
Right, David Marshall. I didn't even know who played this goal for Hull. This is how disinterested I am in Hull City. Michael Dawson. I know Michael Dawson. He used to play for Spurs. Mm-hmm. And then Diamande, 4.6. He's had no goals or assists since game week one. So he's
I hope it stays that way. I hope he scores one goal this season on a double bicycle kick. And that is the only goal and assist he has the whole season. The first goal of this season, the Premier League season, was a double bicycle kick. I mean, you kind of have to retire after that, right? It's like that's the end.
Yeah, I really hope that Diamande got that goal bonus. And he said, I'm going to put this goal bonus in this little coffee tin. And I'm not going to touch it.
Can't open it for 2 years.
Exactly. Because I don't know when my next goal bonus is going to come. So I'm just going to save this.
I think we can simplify things here for Hall. There's one and only one player that you'd want in Hall. I mean, we could talk about Marshall. The thing about Marshall is he actually has three matches with six saves already. I mean, he's getting tons of save points. He's kind of like the hipster Tom Heaton or something. but I think in general you can't really have a Hall defender. They're getting destroyed a little too consistently. I don't know if they've actually kept a single clean sheet the entire season. Maybe in game week two. But in general, they're not keeping any clean sheets. And even though their defenders are super cheap, there's just really no one you'd want on that team. I mean, Michael Dawson did score a goal in game week 11, but he's not a goal scorer in general. He's a center forward. And Diamandi does not interest me at all. If you need a cheap third forward, you obviously have to go with Anachibe at this point.
There must be people out there doing a Pickford-Marshall rotation, maybe. There must be somebody else at 4.5 that's worth having in goal apart from Marshall. I just don't see it.
The Jakku thing was fun. I mean, when Jakupovic was playing, a 4 million backup defender is fine. I mean, that's like a totally, you know, that like at 4 million, sure, you know, no problem. But, I mean, that half a million does make a pretty big difference, I think.
Yeah, these fixtures for Hull too, even though they look easy according to the FPL's fixture tracker, West Brom, Middlesbrough, Crystal Palace, these are all teams that are going to look to – they're all, first of all, teams that need 3 points.
Yeah, exactly. I mean that West Brom game, I mean they're home, but I think they could be held, you know, scoreless in that game. And, I mean, the Burgers can be pretty tough at home. They don't have George Friend anymore, though.
I know. Friend, that's like a burger with no sauce.
It really is. And then they play Crystal Palace. They'll score a bunch of goals in that game because Crystal Palace always concede like 5 goals. I mean, holding Man City to 2 goals is actually a kind of an accomplishment for them.
Mandanda, I don't get that guy. He is the Brad Guzan of this season. Like I want to like Mandanda, and it seems like he's a fan favorite, and I know
I was all good, in. Yeah. At the start of the season, I was all about Mandanda. I don't understand what happened. Their defense was pretty good last season, and it's not Mandanda. He is not the reason they stink this year. I don't know if it's Delaney or what, or if they're just committed to an attacking style or what. But man, that defense has been bad.
It truly has. Speaking of bad, we got Swansea City.
Last but not least, the last garbage bin that we're looking into. Okay, so Swansea actually do have a couple interesting prospects. One is Gylfi Sigurdsson, who, even though I was just kind of making fun of him a moment ago, is a pretty interesting player given what they've got coming up over the next 8 fixtures. They're home to Crystal Palace in game week 13. Then they have a tough match away to Spurs. Then they go on this. So they've had this horrible run from like game week like 3 to game week 12.
Poor,
they played.
Poor Bob Bradley was just thrown into the fire.
Yeah, it was. I feel like at one point there was like they had like it was like Arsenal, Man U, Man City, like 3 matches in a row or something like that. It was terrible. So now it's like finally evening out a little bit, and so they'll play Sunderland, West Brom, Middlesbrough, West Ham, Bournemouth, Crystal Palace, all in a row from game week 15 to game week 20. And, you know, looking at this, it makes me wonder if you were me, Brandon, and you were looking to get rid of Antonio, who gave me like a miracle 6 points this game week, but he's definitely on his way out. Would you look at Gylfi Sigurdsson or would you look at Theo Walcott?
Theo Walcott, that seems obvious, right?
Well, obvious for the Bournemouth match, but I don't know. Long term, I kind of like Siggy for... I don't know. I don't know if I can do it. I think I need Walcott. Walcott's such a flat track bully that I could see him scoring like 3 goals in that Bournemouth match.
Yeah, it goes hand in hand with the conversation we were having about Manchester City. I think this City and Arsenal, they've just felt like deflated versions of themselves the last month.
Yeah.
And both teams really started the season really well. They were scoring certainly more goals than they are now. And I just don't believe Arsenal is going to look like this, like the way they have the last few weeks, for much longer, particularly once we get into the meat of the month of December.
They have to stop playing Aaron Ramsey. Like, they have not been good since they brought Ramsey back into the team. I love Aaron Ramsey. I love the way that he plays. I love the fire that he plays with. He is screwing that team up. Like, yeah. It is not – like, they have to get him out of that squad. And I don't even know if he has a future at Arsenal, because just whatever reason, his style is not flowing with the rest of that team. I mean, they have this free-flowing attacking style, and then he came in, and it's just like – I don't know. It's just, it's not working. And he also, like, I feel like he thinks in his head that he's like a 20 goal a season striker. Like, I think he thinks he's like Harry Kane or something. And it's just not, it's not happening for him. And
they're really missing Cazorla right now. I guess that's the major problem. And one you can't really gloss over. Still, I mean, I don't know what problem you have with Arsenal's fixtures coming up, though. And they all look gravy. Bournemouth, West Ham. West Ham can't defend. You got Everton and Man City. Those could be tough. I don't know. I'm trying to talk myself out of just complete and utter oblivion with my Arsenal midfield right now.
Yeah. Who else can we talk about on Swansea, Brandon? Who else stands out to you?
Well, I mean, Jordi Amat, who everyone was really sweating the fact that Bradley immediately took him out of the defensive rotation, but he was our choice 4.0 starting defender.
Yep,
so we were all thrilled to see him play 90 minutes over the weekend.
Played 90 minutes, and, you know, they played pretty well on the road to, a strong Everton squad, or a pretty strong Everton squad. I can't imagine that Amat goes back to the bench after that fixture.
No, and the Swansea defense was not really performing at the highest level without Amat, so
yeah,
I think he stays.
It solves a huge game week 13 problem for me too. I was going to basically have to play either Francis away to Arsenal or Kone away to Liverpool. If Amat wasn't back in, it would have been pretty hairy.
Yeah, I mean, the Swansea team is just littered with guys who I'd like to see do well. You've got Wayne Routledge, who I think Bradley was hoping he was going to be his Raheem Sterling when he came to the squad.
Brandon, I'm just going to stop you because we don't need to talk about this. They're bad. Don't bring them in. Bring in Sigurdsson. If you have Amat, be lucky you have Amat, but I don't even know if I'd bring him in. And the rest of that defense is kind of weird. I was actually looking at different defenders. They've all been going in and out the last few game weeks. So I would feel a little nervous about bringing in any Swansea defender right now. So I think it's Siggy, Holdemont, and that's it.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. I mean, yeah, I can't. How much does Fabianski cost?
It's $5 million.
Okay, too expensive.
Yeah, too expensive.
You're pulling out all the stops to get us out of this Swansea conversation.
I am. In fact, that's it. That was enough sewer dwelling for me. I feel gross. I need a shower.
Yeah, that was the most disgusting, repugnant section we've ever done on this podcast.
It was so gross we kept talking about good teams. All right, so let's take a quick break. We did a couple more questions, then we're going to do our Game Week 13 preview, and then we're going to get out of here.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
Brandon, we have not even talked about the big moment of this game week right now. FPL Booster says, Gundogan or Toure? And what about Yaya Toure, Brandon? What's the deal?
that was such a bizarre event.
So weird.
First of all, weird that Yaya Toure is even named to the squad. Then he's named as a starter. Then he goes and scores two goals. I mean, there's no end to the way this narrative sort of unfolds.
It's so weird. He started at 8 million. Now he's down to 7.6. I mean, you can't bring him in. I mean, who knows if he's going to play? You know,
I told you the only thing that would have made this weekend better is if one of Yaya Toure's goals was him kicking a birthday cake into the upper 90. Yeah. I mean, we were just one step away from that. I'm going to put on my cynical hat, which basically is permanently affixed to my head. But I do wonder if Torre's agent said to Pep, like, just play him once, and we're trying to fix a move for him in the winter window. Just let him play a game, and we'll get him out of your hair.
It would not make me happy if I were a Gundogan owner. I'll say that much. It just sucks. Like, it just puts you in a terrible position, because now you will never feel safe about whether he's going to start. You know, I mean, it probably means for the Christmas fixtures that Gundogan plays half and Yaya plays half. And I mean, I know you can play the two of them together, but you'll never know, you know? And so if I was on the fence about bringing Gundogan in, I'm definitely kind of off that fence now, and I'm definitely not going to do it.
It's true. Had Yaya had a terrible game, then you would have been put at ease. I mean, still, Gundogan has been a great player in that midfield. He would be favored, but yeah. I sympathize with what you're saying. The threat of rotation is threat enough.
What about this question? Brett Cass says, thoughts on a Lukaku and Allen to Siggy and Austin move? I have two frees.
Well, my response to that is see section one of podcast A, in which we talk about all the great strikers to replace Lukaku with. I mean, I'd be curious to know who Brett also has up front aside Lukaku, because I'd be looking at Kane and Costa to replace Lukaku instead of Charlie Austin. But
I would just hold. I mean, I might even hold both those players. I mean, I know it's frustrating that Allen's out for a week, but Allen is still a valued player. You know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I know the Allen managers are kind of frustrated right now because he's sort of like things went from like so high to so low so quickly.
Well, that's been the story of the season. It was Kapu first, yeah. And now it's Joe Allen. These guys, right. People are forgetting how cheap these guys are, and we need guys at this price tag in our squads, and to expect them to perform like Riyad Mahrez every week is, yeah. I feel like it's unfair. So I totally agree. Just hold on to Joe, and I don't see Austin even remotely as an upgrade. It's not even a sideways move. It's a step down, even though I really like Austin.
Yeah. All right. Moving on. That's something. Hogswood says, I am now officially going for Kapuwe as my fourth mid. Too many times he has left points on the bench. Am I insane? I think you are, man. I don't think I'd do it. I would not. I mean, you still have Kapuwe. I got rid of him. How do you feel?
Well, it's like I was saying to Brett, as far as Joe Allen goes, like, what do you expect from these guys? And if you've got three more expensive guys in your midfield, I mean, just for example, say you're going to do Mane, Firmino, and Coutinho, you're going to need someone that's as high as 6.5. And if you're going to go lower than that, why not a player that's actually proven themselves? Etienne Capoue has 5 goals on the season. What else do you want from this guy?
We talked about this in an earlier podcast. I like him a lot as a fifth midfielder. I don't like him a lot as a fourth midfielder because I just don't think he's quite consistent enough. I don't know. If you got him at 4.5 million and he's, you know, he's your fifth mid, I think that you're in a great spot. But I think in general, I don't know. I had him as my fourth midfielder for a few weeks and I was very frustrated. And I'm definitely glad that I got rid of him.
Next question comes from Siraj Garish. Hey, Siraj. Is it crazy that I still own the treasure troll that is John Stones? City have to start keeping clean sheets sometimes, right? Now, the first thing I would just say to Siraj is the real treasure troll on City is Leroy Sané, because the man like physically resembles a treasure troll.
That is true.
But secondly, it's not the craziest thing I've ever heard. I think we touched upon this earlier that I personally feel like City's form is going to improve over the next month, and as part of that, I would expect to see a handful of clean sheets, assuming Stones gets the start. And now that Company, they're surely digging a grave for Company behind the Etihad at this point. Stones will. I don't even know what come good means for John Stones. I feel maybe his name won't be mud by the end of 2016.
I cannot in good conscience say anything positive about John Stones in this podcast. And in 12 game weeks, he has one clean sheet. He has not started at least two of those matches. There was one match when he came out in the second half. It is not happening for this squad. I mean, they're not really – I don't really understand why they keep giving up goals. I mean, the fact that, like, it does seem a little fluky does – I mean, there's sort of two ways to look at it. One is that it's just some variance and that it'll kind of clear itself up. The other way to look at it is that they just don't really seem to have the right shape or something. You know, it's just not like – they're not working well together. And so as a result, they're always going to – they're not communicating well enough or something, and they're always going to concede some goals. And if that's the case, then you really can't have Stones.
I don't know who to recommend in place of him, though. I mean, who at 5.0 is keeping clean sheets? Anyone on Everton? No, they can't keep a clean sheet. Even the higher-priced Arsenal defenders can't keep a clean sheet these days. So, I mean, what are you going to waste a transfer to get rid of John Stones?
I don't know a waste of transfer, but at some point I would like to get rid of it. I mean, like, why not bring in a West Brom defender? They have great fixtures, and you can bring in my boy Nyam for $4.3 million.
There you go.
Can turn that upgrade your midfield for 0.7.
All right, so we're going to round out this Q&A section with something that's sort of geo-targeted and also slightly philosophical. It comes from Mr. Greaves. And he says, do you guys think that your location could make a difference with your lineup transfer choices? Where I live on Saturday, the early game is played at 8:30 in the morning. So I usually make my transfers and fix my lineup before I go to sleep on Friday night. So I sympathize. It sounds like Mr. Greaves lives somewhere here in America, not far from us, I guess.
I was trying to figure this out.
What does he live? He lives somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean.
The other way. Yeah, does he live like the Bermuda, perhaps, or something? I'm assuming that Mr. Greaves, who's we should call him by his at handle, by the way, pronounced FPL Fatty. FPL Fatty. I think he must live in Bermuda. Okay, so I don't know that it really affects the moves that I make. I know that it causes me a lot of stress, and I know that you're in the same position as me. There are many nights when it is time for bed, and my wife and I are going to bed, and she's done. She, like, lights are off, and I am sitting there in the darkness with my iPad, scrolling through different options, trying different team combinations out, and I would love to be able to wake up on a Saturday morning, have some coffee, have some breakfast, go for a walk, and then come back and very calmly make my final transfer.
No, I want to be done Friday night. I want to be done and out, and I can wake up on Saturday, and it's game time.
Okay, when is the last time you made your transfer before 1 o'clock in the morning?
Poof. I guess the Lukaku transfer I made going into game week 12, it was – I think for like Friday morning I made it.
And so Friday night you weren't debating making a second move? You weren't looking at possible
decisions? No. This is a whole other section for me. I mean, Friday night maybe I should have been, but I haven't burned four yet this season. And I think that's what's causing my team to really stagnate at the moment.
Brandon, it's game week 13. We're not going to go through all these matches, but just a couple things stand out to me. One is Burnley hosting Man City. Now, what's interesting about this match is that Man City play a very difficult Champions League fixture on Wednesday, and yet they have the early match on Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm. That is pretty brutal.
That is pretty brutal. I'm shocked by that, by the way. I can't – I mean, I felt like when you have a Wednesday champion, don't you always play on Sunday or nearly always? That's – why is Watford Stoke, which is on Sunday, not being played on Saturday?
And why can't they postpone this match so we can get a freaking double game week up in this FPL game already?
I want that. Maybe we'll get a cold weather double game week this year.
I mean, excited to watch this Chelsea-Spurs game. I mean, they always deliver in terms of spectacle. I think of me suddenly realizing that Harry Kane was fixture-proof two seasons ago when he, I don't remember if it was a hat trick or two goals and an assist or whatnot, at Stamford Bridge.
And oh, then, yeah. That of was course, his coming out game.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's been gay ever since. And then, of course, at the end of last season when Chelsea just brutalized Spurs and took the league title right out of their hands and drove Dembele into an eye gouging rage.
Yeah. Was that a midweek? I feel like I remember watching that at work last year.
Yeah, I think
year.
It was a Monday yeah. night fixture.
Okay. So captain choices. I do not like Aguero because I don't really like captain players for the early morning fixture anyway. I know that's kind of superstitious on my part, but especially given that they play on Wednesday, I just think that's kind of a tricky captain choice. I think that I will be looking at one of the Liverpool midfielders for that Sunderland fixture. I think that Coutinho or Firmino are the two that really stand out.
Yeah, that could be a pretty brutal game for Sunderland. They'll be crashing down to earth after that, I expect. Yeah, no, I agree. There are so many red flags against Aguero. Playing Burnley is, despite what we saw against West Brom this game week, are much tougher at home defensively, and there's probably going to be a hangover. I mean, if I had a Liverpool player, I'd probably go for it. I mean, shoot, if
so
I...
Is Alana, like, is he definitely out for this
upcoming game week? He's down to 25% with a,
wow,
a groin slash hip slash pelvis injury.
That's so, almost a red. That's like a dark, that's like a very dark orange right there.
So what one thought was just like a contact knock in an international friendly. Basically, it's like he was involved in a head-on car crash, as far as I can tell.
The friendly strike again. Arsenal, I think Arsenal at home to Bournemouth is kind of an interesting fixture. I think that you could very reasonably captain Sanchez or even Walcott. I mean, I know Walcott hasn't done much the last couple game weeks, but this just feels like the kind of match where Walcott can really dominate.
Yeah, I'm thinking if I still had Ibrahimovic, I'd captain him against West Ham.
Yep, no, that makes sense too. Yep.
But I don't, so I can't.
So that's that.
So that's that.
All right, see you later.
I mean, okay, instead of us picking a clean sheet, Josh, here's a game we should play. Let's not pick a clean sheet. Let's bet on whether or not there will be any clean sheets this weekend or not.
In any of the matches.
In any of the matches.
Yeah, I think if only because of the Arsenal-Bournemouth match, I just cannot see Bournemouth scoring in that match.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. I mean, remember the days when we were like talking about which Arsenal defender would be best because there were so many good options?
I know.
Mustafi has just been a headache, ongoing headache for me. But yeah. I do like that pick. And I think Liverpool looks pretty good at Sunderland. They're coming into it now.
Yeah, Loris Karius back in my squad. I can never play him the right game week. Somehow he's picked up clean sheets away to Southampton and away to Man U.
Well, here you can't go. Well, you could go very wrong because you've got Pickford versus Karius. So both your goalkeepers in one match. Wouldn't it just be so great if you played Karius and Pickford got a clean sheet against Liverpool?
Or saved a penalty or something.
Yeah, that's true. Because there's simply no way Pickford is keeping Sunderland in that match.
There's no way. No way. All right, B, that's it. I feel like, you know, I'm looking at the run, you know, it doesn't seem, well, actually, no. This looks like we talked quite a while.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. Only two topics, and yet we really stretched it out, didn't we?
Who knows if we really said anything of substance. But anyway, if you haven't yet, subscribe to the Always Cheating Podcast. You can find us on iTunes, where we encourage you to leave a review if you could. That really helps us out. You can also subscribe on SoundCloud. We're on Stitcher Radio, Google Play, Acast, and TuneIn FM.
You can also find us on social media, Twitter, we're at Hail Cheaters, Facebook.com/alwayscheating. You can always send us an email, hailcheaters@gmail.com. You know, we have an email from Joe Morgan that I've been meaning to respond to. So unless, did you respond to him, Brandon?
Sorry, Joe. We'll get to you shortly.
Yeah, sorry about that. I wanted to give him a special shout out because I feel bad that we have not responded to that email yet.
Yeah, exactly. And just a second reminder to go read Lucian Madison, official Always Cheating Poet Laureate's poem, Zlatan's 69 Touches in the Box. It's an interesting read, so you can find that on alwayscheating.com on our blog page.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving, Brandon.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to all of our American listeners out there. I hope you spend it with loved ones, that you enjoy yourself, and that you usher in many points for Game Week 13.
That's right. And don't talk about the election with your family.
Oh, God. Well, yes. Avoid it at all costs.
Yeah. All right. And Bacani forever, Brandon.
All right. Have mercy and hail, cheaters.